You're listening to the NAGRA Podcasters Network.
I think I know most people in the room, but the thousands of people, I forgot. This is a podcast, so no one's going to know how many people came tonight. So I'd like to thank the hundreds and hundreds of people for coming out to the Niagara Falls Public Library this evening. My name is Carl Oxeter, and I am co-host of Niagara's number one Indigenous podcast, One Dish, Woo! One Mic.
My name is Sean Vanderklis. I am the other co-host. I'm the yin to his yang. So once again, thanks for coming, ladies and gentlemen. What we're doing here and what we have been doing with the library over the last several months and hopefully for several more months to come is we're going to be filming, we're going to be screening films that cover indigenous issues. This film we're focusing on is called 6 Miles Deep, and it focuses on that Caledonia crisis that occurred in 2006. My apologies. Upon completion, what we're going to do is we're going to give you the opportunity to ask us any questions. If there's any sort of dialogue that you would like to have, feel free. What this really is about is it's a safe learning environment. No questions are stupid questions, so we would encourage you guys to step up onto the mic and step up over to the mic and let your voices be heard. Keep in mind too that we are a podcast, so what we are doing is we are recording this, and this will be developed into our next episode, so we'll release that and whenever Carl gets around to it.
Yeah, this will go out in the ether, so fair warning, if you stand up to the microphone, then your likeness will be on the internet forever and ever and ever and ever.
Did you hear that, Noda?
So I think without further ado, we came to see this awesome movie that we're looking forward to screening for you. So thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you in about 45 minutes.
In the heart of the One Dish with One Spoon Treaty Territory, Niagarans Sean Vanderklis and Carl Dockstader dish on any and all issues from a First Nations perspective. From pipeline politics to poverty to pan-Indianism and more, Sean shares his concrete curve leg take and Carl gives an urban Oneida angle. You are listening to One Dish, One Mic on the Niagara Podcasters Network.
The last movie we screened here at the library was You Are on Indian Land. And now tonight we screen 6 Miles Deep. And what struck me about the two movies is how little has changed. You Are on Indian Land was about border crossing rights and the sovereignty of the Ungwehome people and had to do with the great contradiction that's life on the Akwesasne Reservation and how they literally split those territories. They put their lines through our territory, as they say. And so the people of that territory stood up and they said, enough is enough. And that movie was made in the 60s. And now here we are decades later. And there's still no terms of reference to acknowledge the relationship between Canadian people and Indigenous people.
Well said.
Thanks, buddy.
So any questions, comments, thoughts, observations? No questions is a stupid question. No comments is a stupid comment.
Political statements.
Yeah.
You can say hi to your mom if you want. If she listens to this podcast.
Yeah. Hi, Mom. My mom doesn't listen.
And my mom's not here.
Yeah, so I would like to make a comment. Just want to, first of all, saying that this is really great, you know, for the community to host this event. And it's, you know, really, really great to create more awareness for more non-Indigenous allies. And I think that's the real key to reconciliation is just creating more awareness and more positivity heading into the future. And looking at that film and looking at the poster, indigenizing the library, and looking at some of the signs that were in the film, and it reminded me of portraying more of an accurate history behind the scenes, more deep analysis of what actually happened with the Holloman deed, you know, what happened after, you know, in the early 19th century. So after the Haudenosaunee Confederacy helped the British in the American Revolution. Obviously, the British lost, and that's why everybody ended up in this part of the southern Ontario. So the 6 miles deep on the Grand River was actually a buffer zone. It was made as a buffer zone to protect protect the British from the Americans. So the British were going to live north of the buffer zone. The Grand River was a buffer zone. And then the south were the Americans. So they wanted to use the Haudenosaunee people to protect any more war after the revolution. So a lot of the what came with that Haldimand Track was actually money. It wasn't just the 6 miles on the Grand River. There was a huge amount of money. There was a big treasure chest of money that the British government had paid to the Confederacy. But the Confederacy wasn't allowed to keep that money. They weren't allowed to have control of the finances of that money. And what a lot of people don't know in Canada is that the Bank of Montreal was built from the money of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, from that trust, from that treasure chest. And another point is McGill University was built from that money. And I seen a number in my historical research, and I think it's in the trillions of dollars that the British government owes to the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. The canal, the Grand River Canal that was built, came from that trust, also came from that money. So when you're talking about indigenizing the library, it's you know, having that research, tracing that money trail, the Bank of Montreal, McGill University, the canal, all of that money came from the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, from that trust, from their service that they did for the British in the American Revolution. And also those leases. You know, Joseph Brant had a vision. He had a vision to create an economy for the Confederacy. That is why he leased all those parcels of land to non-Native people. And that's how all those little towns were built on the Grand River. And a lot of those leases disappeared on purpose because the government wanted to steal the land, and that's how they did it. And Indigenous peoples were not allowed to have lawyers back then. We're not allowed to have legal fees, but we knew what we were doing. You know, we knew about economies. We had people that were educated, like Joseph Brant, you know, who went to university and learned to speak two languages. So we knew about these things, you know, but we were oppressed. We were oppressed by the Canadian government with all the legalities. Weren't allowed to keep control of the monies. So those are the types of things that need to be brought into the library to create awareness of the true history of the Haldimand Track. Anyways, I just want to say that.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Don't you think it should be more taught in schools so children grow up realizing this? We learn nothing in school about.
Actually, you know what? That's the number one thing. That's the number one source is the curriculum in Ontario, not just in Ontario but in Canada, the primary school, secondary school curriculum, and that's the kind of work I do. That's what I did my master's thesis on, is looking at curriculum in education, specifically in Ontario, and looking at ways to develop curriculum. Portraying a more accurate representation of Indigenous peoples. But you're right, that's where the real reconciliation is going to come from, is from the education system. So we need non-Native people, non-Native strong allies to push the government to change the curriculum, because education is the tool, you know. And for a long time, the non-Native government used education as a weapon of oppression, but now we could, you know, turn it around and use it as a tool to educate. But you're absolutely right. Thank you.
I think fair is fair. We should mention that this is, for people that are listening to this that don't know, this is Josh Manitowabe. And what do you do? What do you do for a living?
Well, I'm a PhD, second year PhD student at Brock University. I did my master's at McMaster, my undergraduate at McMaster in history. Cultural anthropology. I'm a humanities student. I was a teacher assistant at McMaster at Brock. Currently, I'm taking a year off from TAing. I'm just focusing on my research this year, but I sit on a couple of committees at Brock. There's a new committee that was created there, the Human Rights and Equity Committee, and I look at research proposals that go through university, Aboriginal Research Council. I sit on there as well. But that's the type of work that I do, is looking at curriculum, specifically history, and how history is taught in curriculum of Indigenous peoples. Thank you.
Do you mind sharing your opinion with us then? How do you think it should be taught? Because I'm not sure that the way that the Clan Mothers presented it in this movie is going to gain a lot of traction in mainstream society. I personally agree with them, and I think they're 110% right. But how do you introduce that into the schools? Where do you start?
I think it has to start very young. The younger, the better. You know, grade two, grade three, and just, you know, slowly bringing it in, like the level of difficulty, like a primary school, just, you know, like interaction, you know, younger students like to they like maps, you know, like maps and hands-on things like that. Indigenizing the curriculum more, you know, you could look at specific subjects, you know. Music, for instance, we had our own music, different types of music. Same with math, you know, we built canoes, physics, building a canoe, navigating the water is part of physics, it's part of math, you know. You have the little curve on the bottom of the canoe that cuts into the water when you're traveling, you know, the wind, everything. So those types of things, you know, looking at the specific subjects and looking at the different places that Indigenous knowledge can fit and weave in to the inside the different subjects.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Just wanted to add a little tiny piece for, I'm from St. Catharines, about the money that originally went to the Confederacy that the British controlled. And that there's some information, I'm not a historian, I don't have the all the credentials of the gentleman who just spoke, but William Hamilton Merritt, the founder of St. Catharines and who founded the Welland Canal, there's a scandal there about the appropriation of Confederacy money that just sort of disappeared in the founding of the Welland Canal, the first Welland Canal Corporation. I believe Samuel Jarvis, who Jarvis Street is named after, took the fall within the accountability that did happen. But you never hear anybody talking about William Hamilton Merritt's involvement in swindling the Confederacy to start the Welland Canal. So I just find that interesting little tidbit. And I guess the comment I'd like to make is, while I think there are a lot of emphasis is placed upon children and education, and I understand that and completely support that, but I don't know that we have enough time to wait for the children to be educated and grow up into better settler adults. So it's overwhelming at times and difficult to know what kind of steps can be taken, but I think that young adults, perhaps people of my generation, it's just sort of hopeless, but with people 20 to 40, perhaps, there's a whole generation there where strategies really need attention and focus on how to make change. In the movie, when one of the women spoke about how the dominant culture looks at land as empty, and it's land that's not being used, and it's land that is undeveloped, versus how the Haudenosaunee regarded that land. That for me is a very powerful statement and points to, it points to capitalism basically. And
That's totally fair.
There's got to be a lot of opportunity within that frame of reference for change, because so many people of all generations now do care about the destruction of the environment. And the approach to seeing land as just a basis of transaction for profit is so ingrained in mainstream culture that focus on how to turn that around and how to open the eyes of more settler people to that essential transactional change is, I think, so critical, but not saying that it's easy.
Thank you. Thank you very much for that perspective. How, like, is it just a Haudenosaunee issue, or is there an Anishinaabe perspective?
Well, most definitely. Mississaugas of New Credit is connected right to the Six Nations of the Grand River. I'm relatively young, so I can remember six major events that have happened. So approximately once every 6 years, there's been a major event that is captured the attention of the entire world, right? So we think back to Oka, we think back to Iberwash, we think back to Caledonia, we think back to Idle No More. Like, I was born in 1986. So clearly, there are unresolved issues that need some sort of resolution. And just a special shout out to the Niagara Falls Library, to Niagara College, to Brock University, to the District School Board of Niagara. It really starts with this, to Co-work Niagara itself too. Carl, now you guys have given us a platform. You guys have given us the opportunity to to take over the world, to share what knowledge that we have. Now, by no means is Carl a doctor, nor am I a doctor, but we do have information that has been gathered from practical, lived experience. One of the indigenous ways of knowing is lived experience. And that is, again, crucial to the foundation of who we are as a people. So in regards to the movie itself, I mean, it's really eye-opening. I remember being 20 years old, 2006. I was 20 years old when this was happening. Six Nations is about 40 to 50 minutes, depending on who's driving. And it really hit home, right? Sorry, I'm looking at Ashley in the back. She drives faster than I do. but it really hit home because these are our cousins, these are our aunties, these are our uncles, these are our nieces, our nephews, these are people that we know. Not to bring Sam Thomas involved, but Sam Thomas was put on a like a trespass notice, right? Wasn't there a warrant out for your arrest? And he wasn't even there. Yeah, exactly. So
I think Sam Thomas, the last thing I think is terrorist.
He was terrorist number one, right? So these are real life implications of Niagara that's approximately 50 minutes away. So while all that has said and has come and passed, and now we're living in the era of Justin Trudeau, we have to ask ourselves, we have to have an honest discussion with ourselves and with our elected officials if anything has actually happened. So residential schools closed in 96. The apology happened in 2008. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission report was published just recently. What has happened, right? What are the next steps? I mean, I have some ideas. Carl probably has some ideas. Everybody else has some ideas. But it's time for more than just ideas. It's time for action. And then when I was speaking about the public library and Niagara College and Brock University and Co-work Niagara, these are practical ways to get information out. These are practical ways to get people informed. This is a practical way to get the Niagara community engaged within Indigenous issues. Not even just from our perspective. Like, we have Jill over here who just had a another showing similar to this, right, last week. All practical ways of doing it. So if you want to be informed, if you want to know some more, get on boards of directors, lend your opinion, talk to your library, talk to your local government resources, and hopefully we can go from there. Sorry, that was a long spiel.
No, that's good. It's a podcast. We're supposed to talk.
Yeah.
Right. I guess that's what was impressed upon me is that this everything transpired a little over a decade ago, and the government kind of threw money at it and then made sure that nothing like this ever happened again. Like the Red Hill Valley Expressway had similar grassroots resistance. We're here in Niagara Falls. Niagara Falls had the Thundering Waters Forest, which is slated for development. And they talked in the movie about the number of open files, and that on the one hand, there's multiple open files of land claims. But what's at the heart of it is really philosophy. I think that Elizabeth nailed it when she talked about capitalism. I mean, I don't know if I'm going to go on another anti-capitalist rant again, like I do on every single episode of One Dish, One Mic.
But there's
a worldview there, right? And that's what this movie is about, is that the women don't even own the land. They're responsible for it and they make the decisions. But really, it's the unborn generations in the earth that own the land. But that's a tough concept to stomach in 2018, right? Like how do you actually roll that out as a practical way to run your communities, to run your cities, to run different things? It wasn't answered back when the land dispute happened, and I don't think that's going to be answered anytime soon, but the negative consequences are starting to affect everybody.
Yeah.
It's troubling. So I'm gonna out Elizabeth Chitty because last time she didn't introduce herself, but this is renowned Niagara artist.
I'll give you a run for your money in talking too much, you guys.
All right, listen.
But another critical issue that, and this comes in the how do you encourage change department, is if the two row is about sharing, and in the film. And women were talking about sharing and how the relationship was always about sharing. So what can be done to promote and encourage change in the dominant culture towards principles and ideologies about sharing and collaboration versus the dominant idea of a winner and a loser? Because for I think most Canadians many Canadians have this idea of, we won. The land is ours because we won, you know, like a colonialist, imperialist position. And if we can turn that around to the ideas and philosophies of sharing, I think that's a huge mindset change.
I agree, but can we?
I mean, for me, and this is going to be completely out of left field, but to me, it's not even about sharing. To me, it's about knowing your role and knowing your place. When we talk about the two-row wampum, we have a firm understanding of whose role is what and where you're supposed to be and how you're supposed to travel down that river. Our paths, our governments are not supposed to cross. Right, it's a straight path for a reason, and once we have a firm understanding of what our roles and responsibilities are as individual nations, then we can look above and beyond. Right, because right now it's a power control issue. The government does not view and does not think of Indigenous people as sovereign people, and this cannot be any more articulated than that of Justin Trudeau. I'm a big fan of Justin Trudeau. I voted for Justin Trudeau. Chances are I'll vote for him again. That being said, the way he's dealing with the pipeline itself, he has essentially said that we are going to ensure that this thing gets built. The reason this was shut down was because of lack of consultation with Indigenous peoples. So he's already said we did it. The judges and the judiciary have already ruled that it was not done properly. He says we're going to consult, but then he still makes the same statement that we're going to do it regardless. So if we truly are sovereign in their eyes, then this wouldn't even be a debate. This wouldn't even be an issue. But the fact that he's still imposing Canadian society on Indigenous people who are sovereign just speaks volumes. And now keep in mind, like, in my opinion, Justin Trudeau has probably been one of the most progressive Canadian politicians in the last, probably since his father. And look how well his father worked out for Indigenous people, right? So,
this is a podcast, so the listeners can see me shaking my head the whole time while John's talking about how progressive Justin Trudeau is. I don't even know where to start with that.
So Carl and I frequently disagree on anything and everything.
I mean, I guess to speak to Sean's point, super quick, is that the Canadian government, and really going back to the settler colonial government, treated Indigenous people not well because they were different. And that's what becomes scary with government. If government identifies somebody who's different and who doesn't fall into a certain kind of mold and treats them differently, then that's what becomes problematic. I think that the women in the room can relate to the fact that also for centuries, the government has treated women very differently. And honestly, with everything that's happening with the new Supreme Court justice and things that are happening south of the border, have things really gotten better? Like I don't think The Handmaid's Tale was meant to be a prediction, but I'm beginning to wonder what's going on. This is our producer. He found a microphone. Yes.
You might regret it at some point. Guys, I love that we're doing this, first of all. I don't know if I get a chance to say that, and I try to stay in the back and just, you know, make sure that everything works so that you guys get a chance to tell your stories. But I think one of the questions that's come up, not only tonight, but in the previous screening, was how do we get settler attitudes to change, and how do we communicate in a way that helps other people, you know, aside from the few settler folk who are in the room, you know, start to
hundreds of settler folk. Come on.
Yeah, sorry. Right. Yes. How do we change those? Or persuade those people to hear these stories. And I would say we just need to tell them. When you see these stories, even if you are opposed to the ideas in them, seeing it changes you. And hearing your stories and sort of vicariously having that shared experience has changed me. And it's made me want to help you to tell these stories and more stories. And I think the more that we, being, you know, the settlers, help other settlers, you know, share these stories with them, the more that we can do that, the better that we can do that. I think the more that we start to change this conversation in the way that Elizabeth was describing, and that I think it's great that we're working hard to change the hearts and minds of our younger generations, but there are a whole lot of people in the middle who are perfectly capable of, you know, learning new things, and so we should expose them to some of these ideas, and I think we do that through our culture, our other storytelling vehicles, all that sort of thing. So I think NAGRA Podcasters Network might have a role to play in that, but I don't know what that looks like yet. The one thing that I wanted to talk about that really disturbed me is another trend that sort of emerged between both of the screenings, and that is the extreme use of force in response to what are peaceful demonstrations, that if that were a group of white people, the same response wouldn't be issued. Like, you wouldn't have hundreds of police officers, you know, coming to disrupt those demonstrations in the same way. And that bothers me greatly. And I think if there's one thing that we can do It's to have those conversations with our government to say that level of force is inappropriate for those situations. There's no reason why we can't be patient and let the demonstration take its course. And the next time those police officers show up, it should probably be to put the white people in line. So that's what I think about that. I don't know what the answer is in that other than, I'm going to see Chris Biddle at some time in the next couple of weeks, and he and I are going to have a conversation about this. So that's what I can do. But I just wanted to say that I recognize that, I noticed it, and it bothers me. And so I want to say something and do something about it. So thank you.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing. Yeah, no, that's important. I mean, what happened with those ranchers in the States, right, that reclaimed that land, and they pretty much just handed it over, right? They wrote the check, and there was a group of rangers, and they just decided that this was going to be our land, and they let them take over a state park, and not a gun was drawn.
Yeah, by force, too.
Yeah. So, but then meanwhile, we want to block a road and shut everything down and send out as many squad cars as you can. It's even if you don't agree with everything exactly that we say, I think one of the main points of the movie is that Indigenous existence is different than the existence for non-Indigenous people. Those perspectives are completely different. And even the way that they framed the narratives that were being put forward by the Indigenous people and the clan mothers and by the traditional government. And then when they showed the pure vitriol in Caledonia, like the people were literally, when you see the movie, you can literally see spit coming from their mouths as they generate the most hateful words that they can think of to frame the conflict that they're having with the Indigenous people. And after everything is said and done, the government wrote them checks, wrote checks for their businesses so they could put everything back, because heaven forbid that you disrupt a couple thousand white people.
Right.
It's sad that we live in that world.
One of the things that the movie really didn't touch on or focus on is the steps that led up to this. It's not like one day they woke up and said, you know what, I'm going to block a road. This was in the making for almost 80 years. Dialogue has occurred. Correspondence has been sent. Eventually, something has to happen. Something has to give. And this was the unfortunate end result of that. But I think it's fair to say that if you were to go back and ask any of those clan mothers, would you do it again? I would almost guarantee that they'd say yes. To speak to the one more point from Trevor, we are in an abusive relationship. The very concept of truth and reconciliation is understanding the truth that has happened from historical perspective. And reconciliation portion of it is not government imposed, but it's more so from the victim's perspective. If I'm the victim, then what my reconciliation is going to, that's going to be my truth. The government, despite the programs that they put in place and despite all of their good intentions, unless I can identify with that and unless that means something to me, you are simply wasting your money. So unfortunately, truth and reconciliation has to be driven by the Indigenous people. It has to be driven by the victims. So that's my answer, or that's my two cents. Sorry.
My name's Rebecca. I'm a settler of Mennonite descent. That's my, cool introduction, because Indigenous people all have cool introductions, so I wanted to give myself a cool introduction as well. So at the last screening, Carl said, I don't like to tell other people what to do or how to live their lives. And I don't have any problem with that. So I have some settler instructions for any settlers listening to the podcast or here tonight. So this first one is from Carl's sister, Jennifer Dockstetter. She said that the Ontario and Canadian governments don't care what Indigenous people have to say. They've shown that in their actions over and over and over. So it's going to take the settlers to speak up to the Canadian and Ontario governments to actually make anything happen, because the Indigenous people have been saying this for centuries and nothing's changed. So we're up. It's our turn. We need to stand up for people and hopefully move society forward in this way. So get calling your MPP, your MP. Luckily or unluckily, right now I'm in a conservative riding in Ontario, so that's,
good luck,
you know,
with that.
Having, but then I have, you know, then you can go call them and visit them, and they actually might have a say in something because they're in power at this time. Talk to your family members. Tell stories. I have a family member who had racist attitudes, would never go and hit somebody or harm somebody, but had a lot of racist attitudes. And after I learned about how much the Canadian government owes the Haudenosaunee people, I said to him, I said, how would you feel if someone said to you, we're going to buy your house and we're going to pay you when we feel like it, and when we feel like it might be never. And you're going to have to leave and go to kind of a gross part of town that's not very safe, and you're going to be at major risk. But we're, you know, we're just taking your property. We'll pay you eventually. How would you feel about that? And then this family member was like, wow, that's really awful. I didn't realize that was the situation. I would feel awful if that were happening. And then the tide turned. So one-on-one conversations, I'm finding, have a lot of impact with my friends and family who have the racist attitudes. And then I would say about the children, don't wait for the curriculum to catch up to where it should be. I would say teach them young. My son knows that the real name for North America is Turtle Island, and he thinks that's very cool.
Sweet.
Bring them to the powwows. Bring them to Celebration of Nations. My son and I painted a wampum belt on St. Paul Street, and we talked about the importance of working together. And so if our young people, if our kids are growing up with you know, maybe my Mennonite way of knowing and the Indigenous way of knowing, then it's going to be bizarre to them, all of the racism that is going on, and they're going to be equipped to stand up for it. So those are my settler instructions for tonight.
I love it. Yeah, that was right on. We have a tradition on our show called The Traveling Thought, and I hope everybody in the room has listened to every single episode of One Dish, One Mic. If you haven't, I forgive you. Pause this episode, go and listen to the other 29 episodes. We'll wait. Okay, welcome back. So you now know that the Traveling Thought is a sort of epilogue or reflection upon today's events or what we've learned. So I would actually like to invite anybody in the audience who maybe wants to summarize the night, their experiences, their thoughts on the movie or on this particular episode, to share their thoughts if they see fit. Seeing no hands. Motion carry. Oh. This is going to be on a podcast.
Yeah.
It's like a radio.
Yeah.
Like a radio broadcast, only better.
It's like a radio, but just on the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You can come to the library. The library has free internet. Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Oh, yeah. Yeah, all right. Thank you. Thanks.
We might be working on something at Niagara Podcasters to get us actually on the radio, but we'll leave that for another time.
Breaking news.
Yeah.
You heard that first.
A little teaser there. But one of the things, I'm just really grateful to you guys for putting in the work to help coordinate these types of things, to the Niagara Falls Public Library for making this space and time and the resources here available. And to folks like you who come out and listen to these stories, because every time we hear these stories, it changes us, and that changes everyone that we have an interaction with. And I think that's how we move this forward. So that's the bulk of my traveling thought. There's one last little bit in there, and that is that, you know, I miss working with you guys on a regular basis. And I really want to make sure that we get back into the studio for our season, 2.5 at this point?
Yeah, I think so.
So, because we do have lots of stories to tell, yeah. And we need to get to the work of doing it. So as your producer, I'm giving you that gentle nudge to go back to that place and let's do that work together and help make this change.
All right. Well said.
That's my traveling thought.
I feel like I just got in trouble by my uncle.
In front of everyone,
I know.
Too. In front of our hundreds of listeners.
Yeah. Traveling thought?
Sure.
You know how I meant it.
For me, my focus for the last little bit has been the Truth and Reconciliation Commission and the term Truth and Reconciliation. What it boils down to is just an understanding of oneself, right? Well, when you sit back and you wake up in the morning, get yourself ready and you look in the mirror, who do you see, right? Have that honest conversation with yourself. Chances are it's not ugly. It's not mean. It's not hurtful. It's not vengeful. It's positivity, right? So when you carry yourself throughout your life, throughout the day, throughout the week, you need to have that same positivity. You need to have that same first morning glow about you. And what it comes down to is us being human beings and seeing each other as human beings and not having this sense of entitlement or the sense of being scared. Fear is a big contributing factor to racism. One of the ways we always open up the show is we say that this is a safe environment, because if you're scared to ask a question, you're going to believe whatever thought that you may have. So we encourage people to say things that might be offensive, right? Say things like, what's wrong with saying Indian? Something as simple as that. So that fear, if you continue to live in that fear, you're never going to improve. So my traveling thought is just being a good, well-rounded, kind individual. The way you see yourself in the morning is the way you should see the rest of society. And to me, that's really the only real way to progress. That's the only way to true truth and reconciliation is by the individual looking within and exerting it out. So that's my truth. That's my traveling thought.
Right on, man. Right on.
Thank you.
No, I agree. For my traveling thought, when this land reclamation happened, I was a chef at a local golf course, and I was embarrassed to admit that I was Indigenous. I wasn't there on the front lines. I was living a colonized life. My bosses, we had a TV at the golf course, so this was on all the time while this was happening. And when this would come on the news, I would be the one shaking my head going, those rowdy Indians, you know, geez, like, what are they doing? Causing a ruckus. You know, why can't they be grateful for what they had? And then I don't know more happened. And my sister got at me. Any of you who know my sister know that she's always in my ear going, they're standing up for something. They're standing up for a principle. They're standing up for a reason. And so I had to re-educate myself and understand that it's not about Douglas Creek per se. It's not about the 6 miles. It's not about a specific land claim. It's about a way of being. And the more I study our people, the more that I realize that we've been pretty consistent. You can look, we were lucky to have a historical expert, an almost PhD here, Josh Manitowabi. I have mad respect for that gentleman. But the more history you study, the more you learn that it's relatively simple to understand our ways. Just be kind, be shared. There's one dish and we're all sharing that same dish. So we need to do a little bit better to make that happen. That's it. That's all I got. That's all I got.
Good job.
That's all. Thank you for having us here at the public library. I honestly believe that things like libraries and schools and other shared institutions, I think that they're the way that Western society exemplifies the shared values. And I think that by having a public space to come to, like the library. I think that that's one way that we can actually live the one dish principles, to have that common area where we can come and collectively pool our knowledge and to have books to share and to read and to experience. So I also would like the audience to give themselves a round of applause for sticking with us through this. Thank you. We wouldn't be able to do this without you. Thank you to yourselves. You guys are all beautiful. It's a podcast, so no one will know whether we are or aren't beautiful. Thanks for coming. You've been listening to...
Oh, sorry. Do you mind if I say quick something? Hi, I'm Greg Jansen. I'm a community development and programming librarian here at the Niagara Falls Public Library. I just wanted to thank you so much for being here. We're honored to have you. We're honored that you all came out this evening. And I just wanted to remind you, we do have an Indigenous collection in the library. And we also have tonight's film and the film we showed last time as well for the dialogue are available in our collection. And you can get them on the National Film Board website, too, if you want to share with friends and family and whatnot.
Thank you very much for thanking us. You've been listening to One Dish, One Mic right here on the Niagara Podcasters Network, live from the Niagara Falls Public Library. We'll be back February 21st for another exciting edition of One Dish, One Mic Live.
Love you guys.
Oh, Nagitwa.
Thanks for listening to One Dish, One Mic on the Niagara Podcasters Network. Your hosts are Carl Dockstader and Sean Vanderkliss. Recording is done at the Pop-Up Podcast Studio at Cowork Niagara, home of Niagara's independent workforce. Executive producer is Trevor Twining. Production assistance by Daniel Twining. Show artwork by Mitch Baird. Music by DJ Shub, used with permission. If you have show ideas or comments, you can reach us on Twitter at Niagara Podcasts.